This episode is brought to you by Puttercup. More than a training aid, it's a skill enhancer. Visit puttercupgolf.com and use the code GOLFSMARTER to get 20% off your order. Now, let me explain. We've discussed many training aids on this podcast, and frankly, there have been a lot that have crossed my desk that you never heard me talk about, either because I didn't get it or I thought it wasn't worth your time. But Puttercup is different. After nearly 20 years in the market research industry, Matt Davis, a lifelong golf nut like all of us, had an idea on how he could help every golfer feel more calm and confident when they putt. This isn't a device to improve your mechanics or develop the perfect stroke. Puttercup is designed to strengthen your focus and reduce distracting thoughts while you're putting. How? Puttercups are golf hole inserts that encourage golfers to focus on the putting essentials of speed and aim. They're lightweight and easily fit into your bag so you can fine-tune your focus before every round and at every practice session. Puttercup gives you instant feedback, so it's easy to get dialed in quickly and feel confident as you head to the first tee. You've got to check it out for yourself. Go to puttercupgolf.com and use code GOLFSMARTER to get 20% off your order. And combined with the 15% discount you get with the Pressure Putt Combo, you really save. And the Pressure Putt Combo includes both the Speed Bump and the Center Cup, two very different but very valuable skill enhancers. That's puttercupgolf.com and get 20% off your next order with promo code GOLFSMARTER. This episode is brought to you by Indeed, a company driven by the search for better. Because when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search, but to match. Think about the time and energy you've put into finding the best candidate for an opening you have. But it's more than finding someone. You want to match all the candidates to your needs. So ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with the right candidates faster. Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. And Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use it, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And here's how to get your openings more visibility. Because you're a Golf Smarter listener, you get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/GolfSmarter. So go to Indeed.com/GolfSmarter right now and let them know that you heard about Indeed here. That's Indeed.com/GolfSmarter. If you need to hire, you need Indeed.
For members only. Golf Smarter number 448, published on August 5, 2014. But first, I want to share this phone call with you that I made this morning. Okay, I'm going to call Tim Kilkenny, longtime Golf Smarter listener.
Hi, this is Tim.
Hey, Tim, Fred Green.
Hey, Fred, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. I'm playing golf better than ever, and I was emailing you because I was so excited. I made my first hole-in-one.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. On Friday, August 1st, I was playing at my home course, and I aced number 14. It was sweet.
How long have you been playing at that club?
About 6 years. And a couple of my friends have had hole-in-ones. I've seen a couple, but I've never had one.
And why do you think this was the time for you to get a hole-in-one?
It's probably just coincidental, but I really liked your interview. I think I listened to it on Wednesday, but it was your most recent episode.
Darren G. from Hawaii.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, the Frustrated Golfer's Handbook.
He was talking about how you can make a hole-in-one. And his philosophy of picking a part of the green where the flag was, dividing it up and saying, you know, this is the area that I'm going for. And I made a very confident swing right where I wanted to hit it. And for the first time ever, it went in the hole.
As soon as you struck the ball, you felt what?
It was pure. I mean, it was one of the best, purest shots I've ever hit. It was a 164-yard back right pin over water.
Wow.
I hit a 6-iron right at the pin. It went right at it the whole way.
And so did it bounce, drop, or did it roll for a while? Did it back up? What did the ball do when it landed?
It bounced once in front, went past the pin, and spun right back into the pin.
Oh. And did everyone go nuts?
There was jumping and dancing.
And what happened after the round?
So, yeah, I got to go in and tell everybody about the hole-in-one, and there were several hundred people at the club.
And how many of those people did you tell about Golf Smarter and that's why you got your hole-in-one?
Now, see, that's what I could have done better, right?
Out.
Forgot all about you.
So you're not sure. You're too scientific about this. You think it's just coincidence, and I'm saying no, it's actually because Darren told you you can get a hole in one if you have the right mindset. Just think about getting this hole in one. Just I can do this.
Yeah, and you know, we all know confidence is a huge part of it, you know, and having the confidence to make a putt, having the confidence to hit the shot that you need to hit to a scary pin. You know, that's always the tough part, but you're right. You can't make it, and you can't make a hole in one without having that confidence to go for it.
Well, I am so excited for you. Thanks so much for sharing this, and congratulations again.
Thanks, Fred.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
The history and a tea tour of legendary Pasatiempo Golf Course.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Ken.
Hello, Fred.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. How's the weather in beautiful Santa Cruz today?
Well, we just came out of a little bit of a hot spell, and we're about 72 today, and got a nice clear view across the bay towards Pebble Beach and Cypress Point, and it's pretty darn good today.
So you are you're in Northern California. We're trying to set this up for people who aren't familiar with the area, who live all over the world, and it is, you're in the hills of Santa Cruz, which is north of Monterey. Lots of people have heard of Monterey.
Correct.
And you're looking down on the Monterey Bay. You have a view of the Monterey Bay from where you are.
That is correct. Yeah, Santa Cruz is on the other side of the Monterey Bay, which is basically shaped like a horseshoe. We are just outside of Santa Cruz in the Santa Cruz Mountains, right at the base of the mountains. Our view looks basically across from our pro shop, and the first tee looks across, and you can't see the golf courses, obviously, but you can see the tip of Cypress Point and Pebble Beach area, but it's right on the other side and just outside of Santa Cruz, but it's a beautiful spot.
It's an amazing spot. I'm very excited. I'm coming out there next week. I get to play for the first time, so I'm really excited to come. I'm nervous about it, to be honest with you.
Well, it's one of those golf courses that if you haven't played it, I mean, this is one where when you walk off the golf course and you think to yourself, you know what, if I'd have played this, you know, one or two times prior, I probably would have done things a little bit differently, just strictly based on where you miss it and where you don't want to miss it, holes you want to attack, holes you don't want to attack, hitting the center of the green, that type of thing. Because if you shortside yourself on these McKenzie greens, boy, it doesn't matter how great a chip you had, you're gonna end up, you know, quite a ways below the hole.
So this is why I called you. to get some local knowledge before I come down so I don't embarrass myself.
I understand completely.
But before we get into the playability of Pasatiempo, let's talk about its incredible history and any insights beyond what we can read on the website and any stories that you know of, I would love to hear.
Well, probably my favorite story and the one I've probably told the most, I did a piece for the Golf Channel, God, probably 5-6 years ago.
Never heard
and
of it.
One of my favorite stories is really how Pasatiempo came to be. It was back in 1929 when the course was built, and Bobby Jones had gone down to Pebble Beach to play in the United States Amateur Championship, and strangely enough, lost in the first round, and Marion Hollins, who obviously was the owner of the golf course and the property and who had hired Alistair McKenzie to build the golf course, she invited Bobby Jones to join the foursome to play on opening day, which was September 8th, 1929. So legend has it, and story has it, and it's documented, is that after playing the golf course, he loved it so much that he had owned this little piece of property back in Augusta, Georgia, we now call Augusta National, and that's when he hired Dr. Alistair McKenzie to design Augusta National.
So then Paso Tiempo is the parent of Augusta National, of the, where the Masters is playing.
Yeah, the combination of his time at Cypress Point and then his time at Paso Tiempo kind of just threw him over the edge and says, you know, there's not another designer I want for this golf course. And he went ahead and hired McKenzie to make that happen.
Amazing. So how is it that Marion Hollins got to own the piece of property that is now Paso Tiempo?
I think really, I mean, it was just basically it was a piece of property. She had come from New York, and she was obviously extremely wealthy for those times. And this was a place that she had purchased. It was more so for not only championship golf, but for equestrian. There was, you know, at the time when the golf course opened, I mean, there were the likes of Clark Gable and other people who had come to this area and to basically not only play golf, but to just relax. I mean, there was beach homes and stables and equestrian centers, which was just north of us in Scotts Valley. And she had quite a handle on the property and really just trying to create a type of a lifestyle for people. But really just kind of saw the property as an opportunity and made the purchase. I don't even know exactly at the time what she paid, but I know that she did acquire it back in some tough times. And then obviously it got tougher with the Depression right around the corner.
Yeah, the course opened up 1929? Yeah.
Correct.
And wasn't the crash just around then?
Yes, exactly.
Wow. Wow. And I understand that Marion Hollins was quite an accomplished golfer, let alone equestrian and many other things.
Yes, yes. She was an amateur champ herself. I mean, she competed at the highest level in amateur competition. And you know, I think at the time where we had opening day, I mean, Cyril Tolley, which was another British amateur that was a great player, and Glenna Collette, also who was a champion in her own right, were playing and competing during kind of the same time frame.
Unbelievable. So what exactly is it that you do there? Explain to us what your position is at Paso Tiempo. How long you been there?
My position is the head golf professional. I basically manage and run the golf operations, which obviously the merchandise, the outside staff, the inside staff, all of the locker room facilities. Obviously do quite a bit of teaching to the membership mostly. My assistants teach a lot to the general public, and I take care of mostly member lessons. But it's your prototypical golf professional job duties. I get to play a little bit. Went out and played yesterday and played in a skins game, and not that I wasn't trying to do it, but I ended up winning 6 skins out of 10 off the members, which sometimes is good, and sometimes if you do it too often, you might take a little bit of heat.
Yeah, you might lose your invitations.
But I enjoy the playing aspect of it. I don't get to play as much as I like to. Most of my golf these days is club golf. I'll play, I just took a trip with 28 members to Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and spent a week there and played, and we've been up to Bandon and Brasada Ranch up in Oregon. Had a great time up there. All great facilities and wonderful people up there, and the members like to bounce around, and I like doing that for them.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Of all the instructors that I've ever had on the program, and we're talking about hundreds at this point, nobody gets to play as much golf as they'd like to anymore.
That's true.
They think I'm going to become they grow up being great players, and they think they're going to be a golf professional so they can play a lot of golf. And
sure,
you find out that that's not really the case.
It's true. I just your job evolves and your responsibilities change, and next thing you know, you're busy. And for me, if I go out and play golf right now and I'll spend 4 hours or 4.5 hours on the golf course, I'll walk back into 20 voicemails and 50 emails that I probably could have tackled if I was still on the job working in my office. So Yeah, it's a give and take. I mean, you just have to balance the two, and I think we all want to play more, but we understand that that's not just the job anymore. We've got some other stuff we got to take care of.
But Pasatiempo is a public course.
Yes. We're a semi-private club, semi-public, whatever you want to call it. We have a membership of roughly 550 members. We have just over 400 shares of stock, so it's an equity membership, and you can purchase a share of stock, and then that doesn't give you necessarily the right to play golf, but it does gives you the ability to purchase your annual membership. So we have stockholders, and we also have stockholder members. So, again, it's an investment, possibly, or you can utilize that ownership of your stock and buy your annual for the year.
I get it. Okay. And because it's, you know, it's such a high-profile location, you know, near Monterey, and you have amazing courses that are known around the world, Pasatiempo is not as famous as those, probably because it's not been on the tour as much? Or why do you think that it's not as high profile as the other courses in Monterey?
I think we kind of have this conversation at the board level as well as, you know, amongst staff that, you know, Pasatiempo is a standalone golf course. When you start looking at the likes of Pinehurst and Whistling Straits and Bandon Dunes and Pebble Beach, who has Spyglass and El Del Monte and Spanish Bay. I mean, it's a destination where you're going there to play golf. And, oh, by the way, we're going to go play Spanish Bay since we're here. Pasatiempo is that you need to be coming here on your way to Pebble, on your way back from Pebble, or you're coming here strictly to play golf versus just running into the golf course as another round you're going to play that week. I still think, you know, people associate Pasatiempo with being private, which I think is something that I've fought the last 10 years with people, and, you know, golf professionals will call me and say, hey, Ken, this is so-and-so from XYZ Country Club, and, you know, my members would love to come play your golf course. Is there any possible way you can play? And then, of course, I say, yeah, and we're semi-private, we're semi-public, again, whatever you want to call it, and we're open. Come on out and play, and we can work something out for you and get you on the golf course. So I think that's still a misnomer, and we've kind of fought that reputation for the last several years, and we're, you know, obviously trying to change that.
Well, for people who are considering flying to the San Francisco Bay Area, you can fly into San Francisco, or if you're headed down to Monterey, you may even just fly into San Jose. But the drive that you're going to take, either from San Francisco or San Jose, you have to go over the Santa Cruz Mountains, and as you're driving there, all of a sudden you go, Pasatiempo? Right? It's right there on the way.
And yes, exactly right.
So it's a nice little side stop, at least for a meal, but and for the views. But you might want to consider putting it on your plans to play around there.
Without a doubt.
You don't really see it as a destination course, though, like the other ones there, right?
No, it's true. It's true. Like I say, I mean, it's its own golf course. I mean, it's really the only Alistair McKenzie golf course in our area that you're able to play and play as a daily fee golf course. I mean, we're number three in the state of California. Of course, you can play next to Pebble Beach and Spyglass, and not too long ago, Manchinella from the Golf Channel put us number one. And we have that link on our website where he said Pasatiempo is the number one golf course to play ahead of Spyglass and Pebble, and which was obviously a huge thing for us. And even just being in the top three, obviously, it's a great honor, but to be, you know, thrown in there as number one by Manchinella, who is a friend of mine and obviously who I respect even more so since he gave us number one. But it's very, very nice, and it feels good.
Awesome. Let's talk about the playability of the course. Let's get some tips on some holes and your features, things like that.
Sure.
So let's start with the features of the course and what it means to be an Alistair McKenzie course.
Well, you look at the green complexes and the bunkering is number one. I mean, those are the things that truly make the Alistair McKenzie golf courses. When you look at, when you watch the Masters or you see the President's Cup a year or two ago at Royal Melbourne, pictures of Cypress Point. I mean, the bunkering of how strategic they're placed, you know, the design of them, a lot of the different fingers. The greens obviously have pretty severe undulations in some of them with a lot of false fronts, where balls can either, even off the back of the green or off the front of the green, can roll off and into maybe into a bunker or into a transition area. So it's really, you know, McKenzie was really about risk reward. He was also, you know, obviously about making the golf course fair. But it's one of those things where if you're testing the golf course and testing a certain hole location at a McKenzie course, especially a Pasatiempo, is that if you, like I say, if you go too long or you short side yourself, you're going to pay dearly.
So is it not a good idea to be laying up on some of the holes just to get yourself in position, or is it smarter to go for it?
Yeah, well, again, that's kind of that thing I said when we first got on the air today, was looking at those certain holes where you really feel like you can take advantage of as a risk-reward, and possibly even being able to play the golf course once or twice before getting here. But for first-timers, I mean, I have a hole-by-hole description on our website. They kind of take everybody through the hole of what club to hit and what club not to hit. But you can see on certain holes out here that if you look at a particular hole location, I mean, you're going to know. I mean, if you're a fairly knowledgeable golfer, that you're going to look at that thing and say, well, if I miss this thing right, I don't think I'm going to be able to get this up and down. So yeah, going for it. I mean, this is why the golf course was built. It was built as a match play golf course, and it's a perfect situation for that, because if you're down one or two down and you want to take a risk at throwing a ball up towards a flag that's way up in the right corner of the green to try to make birdie to win that hole, then go for it. But if not, you might end up being three down.
And are the greens really large, or are they traditionally in the old, you know, in the 20s and stuff, these greens were a lot smaller?
Well, that might be another conversation that we'll have today, but the greens were smaller until Tom Doak came in and did his redesign back in 05 and 07. And a lot of the fingers of the greens came back. A lot of the expansion from the front and the back and the sides came back into play, which got closer to a lot of those greenside bunkers that had, you know, kind of gotten away from those bunkers through the years of just maybe imperfections or just mowing patterns or maybe lack of staff on the golf course back in maybe the 40s or 50s or 60s. But the greens are fairly big, especially for an older style golf course, and again have gotten bigger over the last several years after the restoration.
Interesting. Did you get a lot of pushback from the traditionalists, the purists, when the redesign was complete?
No, I mean, I think really when you look back at it, it's really trying to take it back to the way it was as much as we could. I think there were certain faction of the membership that just wanted to leave it alone. They thought it was good the way it was. But again, that's just the, you know, people resisting change. But I think once the golf course was done, once the redesign was completed, that everybody was just completely blown away. You know, including a lot of Golf Digest, Golf Week, Golf Magazine raters were just coming and going, oh my God, this is fantastic. So Tom Doak is probably, I mean, in his staff, I mean, Jim Urbina, obviously, who did a lot of the shaping, a lot of the work himself, are just complete gurus when it comes to, you know, redesigning McKenzie golf courses.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, so now here, I'm gonna put you to task. You said that you have description on the website, and I'm going to study it a lot before I go down there. But I'm going to ask you about a couple specific holes, and I'm not going to tell you which ones. I'm going to let you choose. But let's pick your favorite. I don't know if I should say favorite or most challenging par three. Which one? And tell us how to play it.
Number three, without a doubt. And I'll give you just a quick snippet of
sure.
Another hole that is probably the shortest of them that gives me the most trouble. Number three from the back tees is a 245-yard uphill par three surrounded by bunkers.
Wow.
So for the most part, for the guy who's playing the back tees, it's a driver. I mean, it's a driver, and it's, again, through the redesign, the golf course added the entire left side of it. For most people who maybe think they can't get there, they'll basically hit a shot that's just kind of up in the neck of the green, and then be able to try to bump the ball up onto the green to try to get it up and down for par. And at the worst, they make a four. I mean, you can go for it, but again, the risk-reward side of it is that if you get on the right side in the bunkers, I mean, your head is probably about 3 feet below the bunker lip as you're trying to hit your second shot up to the green. So again, you can go for it, but I would suggest if you can't get there, lay it up there in the neck, try to bump a ball. It's tight enough grass where you can roll that ball up onto the green and even putt if the pin's in the front. So that'll kind of keep you away from making a big number.
Okay. Were you going to say something about a different par three, too?
Yeah, number three, number 15 on the back nine. I mean, I think I played yesterday, and after I hit my shot, I think I told my foursome, I said, I don't think I've hit this green the last 10 times I've played it.
Whoa.
It's 100, it's 100, and I think it was playing 130 yards yesterday. I hit a 50-degree gap wedge and hit it in the right bunker. I think the three times before that, I hit it over the green. But again, it's just one of those holes where you're looking at it. It's short, but again, surrounded by bunkers. There's a creek that runs in front of the green. And I think visually it's just very intimidating, even though it's a short hole. You're still looking at it going, and plus me not feeling very confident on it, it still can bite you. And that's the thing when you'll see with McKinsey golf courses, that at any hole, at any time, regardless of the yardage, can come up and bite you.
Mm.
Good.
Mm. And bite you hard.
I'm not trying to steer people away from the golf course. But
well, you're scaring the crap out of me. I'm reconsidering.
I just want to just be very realistic when it comes to this design. It is so unique, and you walk away from every single hole going, wow. And you remember, instead of saying, did we just play this hole, or did we just play a hole just like this? Every hole has its own character. Every hole has its own uniqueness.
That's great. Awesome. What about the terrain? You said you were in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and Pebble Beach and the rest are, well, Pebble Beach is right there on the ocean. Is there a similarity between the types of terrain, or is Paso Tiempo so unique that it's more like playing up at the Olympic Club or Harding Park in San Francisco with that kind of trees and things?
I'd probably say it's probably a combination of both. I mean, we're not as close, obviously, to the ocean as Pebble Beach is, but we have, you know, many vistas on the golf course where you can get a glimpse of the ocean. We're a tree-lined golf course. Majority are pine, cypress trees, and oaks. But it's the golf course from the back tee is only 6,500 yards, so it's not a long golf course, but it plays as if it could be, you know, 7,000 yards. But again, it's a somewhat hilly terrain. McKinsey, obviously, being an older style golf course, there's not a lot of space between tees and greens. So for those who want to walk, it's very walkable. I'd say probably, you know, 60-65% of our members walk the golf course, have motorized trolleys, they have push carts, they carry their bags. And again, you walk off the first green and you're walking probably 40-50 steps to the second tee. So
wow.
Again, it's a very walkable golf course, but again, it's a test. I mean, you're going to get some pretty decent hills on the back nine. But if you're used to walking, I'd walk it for sure.
Yeah, well, I definitely will. I play up in Marin County where, there are very few level courses out here. And I prefer walking. I love what, you know, especially in a course that I've never played. I find that when I'm in a golf cart, all I see is my ball, and I hit the ball, drive to the ball, hit the drop ball, drive to the ball.
Correct.
And I really don't even remember the golf course. But when
That's
I walk
correct.
It, I walk it, I can see not only the terrain, but the wildlife and the vistas, and I can absorb so much more of it and get into a better rhythm of playing.
For sure.
So I can bring my own push cart, or I have to use yours?
You can use, yes, either one. We have them for rent, or you can bring your own.
Okay, I will do so. All right, now I'm going to put you on to a par five. Again, either your favorite or the most challenging, and why, and how should we play it? There's three questions in one.
I'd probably say number 13. Number 13 is a par five dogleg left. Again, with the restoration project, the 13th tee was extended, and the bunkering around the green, especially a bunker that plays about 60, 70 yards in front of the green, was restored. Again, it's a good hole. The fairway slopes from right to left, so a drive up the right side of the fairway will kind of trickle and kind of move back to the left of the fairway. All of the trouble really on the left side is where you want to avoid. There's out of bounds on the right, but it's quite a ways away, so you can really kind of get it up that right side and let it just kind of come back to the fairway. The second shot, you just got to take into consideration that bunker that's about 70 yards ahead and just lay it up there short, which will give you a nice little short wedge onto the green. The big hitters can get there in two, you know, probably with a long iron or a hybrid or a fairway wood. There's a couple hole locations on that green that are just nasty. There's a back right location, which is probably one of the hardest locations on the entire golf course. that it's hard to get to because the green, you know, moves from right to left, but the pin is tucked over to the right. So typically, if you're playing in a skin game and you make a birdie there, you're usually going to win a skin. But it's a fantastic hole. The green is shaped kind of like Mickey Mouse. We call it, you know, ear one or ear two. you know, the head basically is the center of the green, and there's two big ears that go on either side, and it's a fantastic hole.
And do you move the flag to all the ears and all his face? I mean, you move them all over the place?
Without a doubt.
Wow. Wow. So, you know, the name of this program is Golf Smarter, and it's not just the name. It's the way I choose to play golf. I mean, I'm not really high on the risk-reward element because I find that the risk, when you're, you know, the quality of player that I am, and I think that most golfers are, risk is really not worth it that much. I mean, it seems like, you know, yeah, I'll go for it, but then I'm going to be double bogeying as opposed to setting myself up for a shot that I'm more confident with and then walk away with a bogey at worst, right?
Yes.
So is that par five something that, again, strategically speaking, you should inch your way up to it as opposed to going for it?
You know, I think it's probably, I mean, it really depends on your game. If you feel like you're a fairly decent bunker player, I'd say go for it because, again, the bunkers are very much around the edges of the greens. And if you go for it in two, I think it's a fairly easy out, and it's not going to be one of those bunkers like I described in number three. You can get the ball into the green. A lot of stuff funnels to the middle, especially if the flag's in the center. But I wouldn't necessarily creep up on that. I think, you know, the par fives are some of the holes where you can really, you know, kind of make up a few shots. Typically, that's where people kind of look to say, you know, if they make a bogey on a par five, they feel like they kind of lost one maybe to the field. But I think the par fives are more so the holes you take advantage of versus kind of inching up on it.
Okay. And what about the bunker conditions? What kind of, I mean, the photographs look like it's pure white sand.
Yes, beautiful sand. It's very playable. Some people, it's dense, so there's a little bit more of the heaviness to it. So a digger in a bunker versus somebody who can just kind of splash it out and slide that face underneath is more so the shot versus them trying to just kind of dig it out with a shallower sand like some people have on some courses.
And are most of the bunkers just around the greens, or do you have a lot of fairway bunkers as well that create some problems in your head?
Yeah, there's a few. There's a few on I'd say probably half the holes have bunkers. Some bunkers are in the fairway strictly as aiming points or to kind of help shape the hole, which was a McKenzie characteristic as well. So there's some balls that definitely come into play or some bunkers that come into play, but as far as the actual difficulty of the ones in the fairway, not really.
Hmm. Okay. I'm really getting nervous. I've definitely played courses where I walked away going, okay, I want to play that again right now. You know,
yeah.
And this sounds like exactly what it's going to be. Not that it's going to be easy to do that. All right, so let's take a couple of par fours that you like and admire and are challenged by. Let's pick something on the front nine first.
Front nine par four probably would be number two. Actually, you know what? I take that back. I'm going to go with number one.
Oh, great.
Number one, two, and three out of the gate are handicapped 4, 8, and 2.
Whoa.
So right out of the gate, if you can maneuver your way through the first three holes, you're okay, you know, heading to number four. But it doesn't start off easy. It starts off with a good challenge. Number one is a 460-yard par four right out of the gate. Got the Monterey Bay in the background. It's a fairly straight hole. No fairway bunkers, but there's a little fairway bunker that's up near the green again, about 70 yards. That'll catch those second shots for those people that are, you know, maybe trying to go for it and maybe just don't get all of it and catch that bunker right there in the middle. Again, a very long green, probably about 38 paces long from front to back, and with a couple of fairly large bunkers that guard the right side of the green. But again, another great hole right out of the gate. It actually back in the original design was a par five with the tee being back a little bit farther up on the hillside, which is one of the things that I know our board and some of our board members and our even our general manager are looking forward to possibly restoring one day. It's not something that's in the plans, but just something that if we can restore another piece of Pasta Tiempo, we'd like to do it.
Mm. And go ahead, tell me about number two. I'm going to drag you through every hole at this point.
Yeah, number two, I'd say probably is a fairway. It's probably my favorite driving hole. I hit the ball right to left, and it's a fairway that slopes from right to left, so I can kind of get it up that right side and let it come down. It's a little bit of a downhill par four. Again, you can see a nice little view from the tee towards the Monterey Bay and the saddle of the trees. And again, one of our few greens that slope from front to back. Most of the greens being push-up greens, they're sloping from back to front. Again, probably going to leave you about a mid-iron into this green. Probably, I'd say, you know, for a drive that you hit 240, 250 yards, you'll probably have 160, 65 left on your second shot. Everything plays from right to left. There's a bunker that kind of guards the left side of the green, but if you can get it up on the right-hand side, everything funnels down onto the green and it releases down towards the hole.
And what about the speed of the greens and also the undulation overall?
In general, our rule is basically running at 10-5 with the undulations. I mean, obviously a downhill putt can get us going as quick as 15, just simply based on the severity from back to front. But if you're just basically, if we're doing, looking at a stint meter reading, our goal is to get them at 10-5 daily.
Mm. That's very competitive,
yes,
to say the least. All right, let's pick a couple par fours in the back nine.
That's easy. 11 and 16. 11 and 16 or 16 is probably McKenzie's most famous hole. It was his number one favorite hole of all the golf holes he designed in the United States. It's our number three handicap hole. 16 has four tiers on the green, sloping from back to front. There's probably, again, another green that's probably 40 paces long and probably has roughly 7 to 8 hole locations, one being middle left, which is just a diabolical position because if you go for it, you go onto the road. I was there yesterday and just so happened to make a birdie myself, so that got me a skin.
Wow.
And then, again, the hole is when you look at it and you come over the hill from off the tee and you stand at the top and you look at that green, it's just amazing. It's just crazy. I mean, you're standing at the bottom of the green or from the top of the green. It's got to be 20 feet from height from front to back.
Is there anything about number 16 that ended up in Atlanta? In Augusta?
I think probably just simply the false fronts. I mean, I think they're, again, one of those things that if your ball doesn't get all the way up or up to the top of the tier and it starts trickling back, it'll roll all the way off the front of the green.
Hmm.
And just some of the severity of the bunkering there. But, yeah, if you look at Augusta and you come play Pasta Tiempo, you can see the similarities pretty much right away.
That's so cool. That you can do that on either side of the country. You are alluding to number 11 as well.
Number 11 is the number one handicap hole. It's an uphill par four. It's not super long, but it is demanding on the second shot. The drive is relatively benign. Got a pretty straightaway fairway. There's a little hazard on the left-hand side that if you hook it and get it going left, you can roll into the hazard. But in the fairway, the second shot is the key. The green kind of slopes a little bit, kind of kitty-corner to the side and kind of away from you, so you're actually trying to carry the fairway bunker, you're trying to carry the hazard and the greenside bunkers onto the green. And then the green itself is again, one of those McKenzie greens where if you don't get it all the way up, it rolls off the front. There's a nice bridge that goes across the canyon once you hit your second shot to drive up to the green. And again, a great vista standing on that 11th green and then to the next tee, the 12th tee that kind of looks back towards the Monterey Bay and even up towards Half Moon Bay.
Mm, thanks for the tee tour on those. When you talk about giving lessons to the members, do you also get visitors who come in saying, I need a lesson before I start playing to understand how to play this course? Do you get a lot of demand of that?
Yeah, we get quite a bit of requests for playing lessons. It's not something that we typically do on the golf course, but I've had people come in and just want to sit for a half hour or 45 minutes and take that much time and try to pay me to give them a description of how to play the golf course, where for me it's, you know, it's something that I just do as far as, you know, people coming out to play the golf course and enjoy themselves. I'll give them as much information I can at no charge. But there's, you know, there are people that want to be able to kind of know before they go out there, because this might be their only time they're able to play it. So instead of, you know, experiencing those, oh, I should have done it this way this time, they understand that, you know, we're not to miss the ball, and I'm more than happy to share that information with them.
And that's why you put a lot of that information on the website. You can just tell them, read the website. I already gave that information out.
Yes, and we do also have, you know, golf lessons here. And like I said, I give public lessons and member lessons, and my staff is also here. I have three golf professionals other than myself that give golf lessons as well. So we're definitely open to the public for lessons.
Yeah, it's a good-sized staff for a course that's a good-sized teaching staff generally.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's talk about the rating and slope of the different tee boxes, so I can get a sense of, because I'm not, I'll tell you now, I'm not playing from the back tees.
I hear you.
Yeah. So what kind of rating slope and where should, you know, I'll get to that next question, but let's talk about the rating and slope.
Back tees are, it's rated over 72, so it's 72.4 and 143 slope. So again, the description I've had with everybody on the air today is pretty accurate, and the slope reflects it as well as the course rating. And I think most people that I would tell that come out here and they look at that 65, 21 yardage, like I said earlier, they all want to play the back tees, and by the time they get to the fourth hole, they say, hey, guys, let's play the whites.
They don't look at the 143. See, that makes me nuts, why people look at the yardage and not the rating or slope.
Correct. If it's under 7,000 yards, is kind of the barometer of what I've seen. If it's under 7,000 yards, they're going to play the back tees, and sometimes it's just a mistake, and they probably would have had a better time playing the middle tees.
Sure. So that's the, how many sets of tees do you have?
Three.
Okay, so your middle tees are what, the blue?
The middle tees are the white tees. So the championship are the gold, and the middle tees are the white, and it's 70.8, 135.
135 is still not a walk in the park.
No. It's still a test, trust me. It's a test from the green tees. I mean, the green tees, which are our forward tees, are 68.9, 130 for the men.
Wow.
So it's still a good test.
Well, I'm going to see if I can convince, you know, I've been invited to come down with a friend and some of his colleagues, and I'm going to see if these guys will swallow and say, come on, let's play the green, and see how they go about it. It's like, I'm not playing the ladies' tees. It's like, oh, really? You know.
Well, you know what? A good alternative is to play the combo tees, which is we have both a white-gold tee combo, and we also have a white-green tee combo.
Okay.
So, and those courses are a little bit more subtle than what we're talking about.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's when guys give me this argument of like, I'm not going to play the front tees. Are you kidding? It's like, oh, excuse me, could you shoot par if you play on the front tees? And, exactly. And they're like, no. I'll say, then why are you being such a jerk about it?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. You mentioned, you know, that when the course was open in 1929, the country was going through bad times, and it made it difficult for the course at that point. Here in California, we're having a difficult time right now with water.
Yes.
And how is that impacting a destination course, a member course in the mountains near the ocean? What kind of impact is that having, and what are you doing about it?
Well, it's impacting us pretty severely. I mean, at this point, we've been cut 50% by the city of Santa Cruz. We're obviously, our greens, tees, approaches, surrounds are receiving 100% of their water needs. Our fairways and roughs are receiving pretty much about the other 40%. So the golf course is playing firm and fast. We're obviously doing our part. We're using every drop that's allotted to us. We're not saving anything for financial purposes. We're putting all the water that we can on the golf course just to maintain playability. And like I said, it's firm and fast. I played yesterday. I played the ball down and it was fine. I mean, there's some firm lies. I mean, it's not lush and wet, but it's, I think for me personally, it's a lot closer to the way that it should be playing anyway. I think people get a little bit too concerned about, you know, perfect playing conditions. I mean, look at the British Open, you look at golf courses in Britain or in Ireland or in Scotland or New Zealand when I went back and played there, that, you know, the fairways are green. When it rains, they turn green. When they don't, when it doesn't rain, they turn brown. But the green complexes and the tees are always good. Hmm. And that's kind of where we are right now. The golf course, again, is a true McKinsey design, and we're just trying to make do and getting through this period.
What is the conversation in the industry in Northern California? I don't know how Southern California, they throw in their nose up at it. I don't know. But what is the water conversation, as opposed to conservation, the conversation going on among golf courses about what to do and how to deal with this crisis?
Well, I think, you know, most people now are looking at water alternatives. I mean, we're right now in the talks for the city of Scotts Valley to get tertiary treated water to the golf course, if you want to call it second water, gray water, and have a treatment plant here on property with a pump station to get into our irrigation system. And then we're researching wells. There's so many issues with wells right now, and just with people that have farmland and crops, and you know, they're pretty tied up. So us trying to track down a well digger to get over here to do it, we're pretty low on the totem pole when it comes to golf courses, when people are, you know, trying to save their crops and their livelihood. So those are probably the two biggest thing is, instead of getting, you know, fresh water, it's going to be secondary treated water and well water. And that's really where we are right now. And we're, you know, we're hoping to have a solution within the next couple of months. And we should be in full force with our new solution by next spring. Because I know that they're dying to know when we're gonna have this done and when it's gonna be done. And we're gonna know within the next couple of months.
When you say they want to know when we're gonna be done, who's the they?
I'd say the members.
Uh-huh. And what about the management company?
Well, the members are the management company. The members own the corporation. It's an equity membership. It's a share of stock, and they own the place.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, it's their call. Well, luckily, they're local. It's not as if it's an ownership company that's based in Georgia or Texas who, you know, or Florida that just doesn't necessarily get what's going on water-wise here.
Correct. That's exactly right. Yeah, it's really, I mean, you start looking at localized problems, it's really something that is not affecting the entire nation on the water shortage, obviously. I mean, we were in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and played golf, and there's no lack of water in Idaho, I'll tell you that. I mean, there were guys out there hand watering. I mean, the golf courses was squishy. I mean, it was probably 95 degrees, and it was so wet, the humidity was just stifling. Mm. So I mean, there's certain areas that are, you know, water flush. No pun intended.
Yeah. I got it. I got the joke.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in Northern California for the golf courses, because I know that there are a lot of very nervous managers, course managers right
Without
now.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, and a lot of frustrated golfers, too. Who are whining, and,
Without, yeah.
and they're whining about the conditions. That's like, oh my God, this course, look at how brown it is. Like, are you kidding? You're commenting on it being brown?
Yes.
Come
yes.
on.
Yes. Well, we also were very sensitive to the fact of what's going on and the amount of money that people are playing to play golf. So we've instituted a program where we're giving out, you know, beginning August 1st, we're giving out $50 vouchers to people to use for a future round. So they come out and play between August 1st and September 30th, we give them a $50 voucher. They can use that for a future round that's good through December of 2015. So we want to, it's a goodwill gesture on our part to say we appreciate you coming out. Here's $50 off. Come back and see us again.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I'm coming after August 1st.
Yes, sir.
and you don't have to answer this because I know these things fluctuate, but what is a green fee?
Green fees are $230 walking and $262 to ride. Once in a while, we'll look at the tee sheet, probably sometimes 48 hours, 72 hours in advance, and see if we have a block between, say, 1 and 3 o'clock that's open. We'll throw up a special on our website for $165, and you can go right to our website, which is pasatiempo.com. Right in the middle of the page, there's a book tee times page, and you can bring it up and check out specials and our rates 24/7.
I love the name Pasatiempo. It is so Spanish, and it is so perfect for golf, right?
Yes,
just
it is.
Pastime. Yes.
Yes, it is. And our logo, which is, I'm not sure if you've seen it, it's probably one of the most recognizable logos, and obviously was voted one of the top 50 by Golf Digest several years ago. It's really cool. So you got to get yourself a shirt.
Well, I'll be definitely checking the sale rack when I get there, because after paying $230 to walk over a course, I'm going to, my wife's going to like, oh, and you bought a shirt too. Really? Really? You bought a shirt too? It's like, oh yeah. And the shirt, here's the shorts and look at my jacket. She's like,
right.
All right, you're out of here. All right. Well, Ken Woods, head professional at Pasatiempo. I really appreciate your time and your tee tour and the tips and the insights and the history lesson. That was phenomenal. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Fred. I appreciate you having me, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week.
I am so excited about this round of golf. I am a little nervous, too. I've never played it, and it's a tough course, and that's always intimidating, but I'm really excited. It's happening tomorrow. I actually had the chance for my tune-up for this round. I've been so focused on it that I was able to play both Saturday and Sunday this past weekend, and I achieved a new milestone. I broke 80 both times with two consecutive 79s. I'm not even close to ever doing that before. Not only am I hitting the ball better, but my strategy, my course management is making a huge difference. You know, it's as simple as if you never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot, you know. Hey, Golf Smarter. It's not just the name of the show. It's how I play golf. Hopefully you do, too. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.